The Demogorgon.
We're deep shit.
Will, you're action.
I don't know.
Fireball in. Have to roll a 13 or higher.
You're risky. Cast a protection
spell. Don't be a pussy. Fireball in.
Cast protection.
The Demogorgon, the size of your silly human bickering, it stops towards you. Boom!
Humans are such easy prey.
The real inducement in this case is a 3D, Your Honor. Dungeons and Dragons and drugs.
Why, you think these are fucking costumes? This is a way of life.
Every day, God, it's the same old shit.
Jesus fucking Christ. Okay. So here we are again, right? It's been, a couple years since, this podcast feed has had any kind of action, right? Like, any kind of things coming out on it. So my bad on that one. Life's been weird. I don't know what to tell you. And things are inconsistent. And not always, you don't always get what you think you're going to get. And that's kind of the brand for Crit Hit, right? Like, if you had to summarize Crit Hit, it's always that, right? It's always described as it's sort of like the punk rock show of conventions and communities, right? It's very much that. And I'll take it, right? Like, that's cool. It's like so much has happened, right? Like, we had a whole fucking pandemic, apparently. Like, I don't know, because I missed most of it. That's a story for another day. I was going to put it in this episode, but I'm not, because this is probably already the longest episode that I've ever put out as Crit Audio Zine, right? So it's pretty long. And so I know you're looking at the time and you're going like, Jesus fucking Christ, how long is this motherfucker going to blab on for by himself? Like, how much can he talk to himself? Well, I can probably talk to myself for a long time, but no, I actually have an interview with Daniel Davis, who's a local artist and now RPG creator. And I've known Daniel, I don't know, for a long time, like probably like well over 10 years, right? And he's always done like really cool art. He's always done really cool projects. He always has like this vision that is on another level, right? Daniel's one of these people that, especially like after talking to him, like this is the first time we've actually talked to each other for any long period of time. Usually it's a couple minutes at a convention, things like that, or something we'll see each other. But like really sit down and have like a deep conversation. This was probably the first time. And there's a lot more to this conversation than what's in this podcast, because we just sort of like bullshit with each other for hours. And the dude is fascinating, right? Like he's one of those people. You ever meet one of those people? Like I tell people I'm not very smart. I'm clever, but I'm not very smart. And there's a difference between being clever and being smart, right? I think there's a difference in people who like to tinker with things or like to make things. And then people that are like true artists, like I like to make things, right? Like I like to make this podcast, I like to write RPG stuff, I like running RPGs. Like I think there's a difference between that. But then you think it's really easy. Like, oh, I'm a pretty creative person, right? Like blah, blah, blah. But then you meet somebody who's like a real fucking artist. And it's just impressive. Like when you just talk to them and you see their work, you're like, fuck, these people are like on another level of existence. Like their brain functions in a way that like I can never know, right? And I admire that so much. There's a few people like that. Like I was lucky, like my best friend growing up is a guy named Ken. And I see he's an artist. He's a graphic artist, but he's an artist primarily who happens to do graphic design. And I think Daniel's kind of one of those people, because you look at their stuff and you're just like, fuck, it's so good. It's so good. And it's so different than what everyone else is doing. And it's impressive. It's kind of awe-inspiring sometimes when you're in the presence of somebody who is truly creative. And Daniel's one of these people that is truly creative. He's been doing this for a while. He's built up his brand Steam Crow. So if you're local and you've been to like any of the Phoenix conventions and you see like these giant cool displays with these really cool characters that are uniquely original, they're not mashups of stuff that you see other places, they're his own creations. That's Daniel. That's Steam Crow is him, and he's Steam Crow. And now the Monster Rangers, which is a project that just sort of sprung up out of his mind again because he's so creative and it's so complete and whole that it's just really cool just to get into his world for a minute, right? But originally this was supposed to be a much shorter episode. It was supposed to be just kind of a regular episode. It was supposed to be more in line with like what I originally wanted to do. I was going to put all kinds of weird shit in this first episode to kind of reiterate the point that this is supposed to be literally an audio zine where it's just like a mishmash of things kind of stapled and photocopied and taped together, right? That's the original concept for this. And I tried different stuff. Like even during the pandemic, we did a thing where like people were I would submit a question and people would kind of, or a topic and people would respond to it. And it was really cool, but like it wasn't quite what I wanted. And it didn't quite work out the way that I thought that something like this should, which is, you know, the ideas that I had for the audio zine, which is that other people would contribute, it wouldn't just be my voice. But I'm hitting the mic with my hands because I talk with my hands. I wanted the audio zine to always be this mishmash of voices and of ideas and of different things, music and art and poetry and writing and you know, whatever things people can be creative and throw into this podcast is what I want. And that has never really been there for me. For a lot of reasons, right? Just the technical limitations of doing something like that were kind of almost insurmountable. Like it was always more work than it was worth. Even doing interviews for me was always more work than it was worth because I get obsessed with like editing and like, you know, that's something when I did video work that was kind of the thing is I'll get obsessed with editing. I'll just keep tweaking and tweaking and tweaking until, you know, I finally have to give in and put something out, right? Like I get these directors that do director's cuts. I 100% get it because when you make something, you wanna go back and you wanna just make it the best that you can. And sometimes you'll get obsessed with it. But that same thing will sometimes prevent you from putting work out there. And so I didn't want to do that with this. I had this very long interview that we did. And I was going to originally just kind of like trim it down and make it into a segment and put it out there. But like, you know, I'm listening to it and I just really enjoy the conversation with him. I think he's so fascinating to listen to and he has such interesting ideas and such an interesting world that he lives in. And I wanted to share that with you guys. I basically have two modes, right? My favorite, like the best compliment I ever got on one of the credit audio zines is I come across as like very like Kevin Smith-ish, which you know what? Fuck yeah. I will take that compliment 100%. Like you can give me a Kevin Smith all fucking day long. Why? Cause Kevin Smith fucking loves what he loves and he's not afraid to share it with people. Right. So I'll take it. And yeah, much like Kevin Smith, I'm also like very crude. I'm not very polished or refined in the way that I speak and that kind of stuff. Right. I stutter around a lot. And, you know, I cuss a lot and stuff like that. That's just the way that I am. And there's, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that, but like, I'll take it. The other one that I've gotten, and I hear it now, like, especially in sort of a long form interview, like this one with Daniel, right. Is that I come across as very, Chris Hardwick. Right. And I'll take that one too, because you know what? He's another dude that's just really passionate and I get his sort of cadence because I talk like that, where I don't quite finish sentences. It's kind of ADHD kind of talk, right? Because I'm trying to formulate as quickly as my brain is thinking of things, how to piece things together and put things together in a way that'll get my ideas across. And sometimes that means starting and stopping and backing up and doing all kinds of weird stuff with the way that I speak. And that really comes across in this. But that's okay. I'll take that too, right? Again, so many things have happened and so many things I want to talk about, like, you know, stuff like I got diagnosed with ADHD. I have a new career since we last, you know, did this. Stuff like Game On Expo, where we did Game On Expo, you know, as the directors for Tabletop there. There's so many things that are worth talking about. And especially with the new Crit Hit Year Zero coming up, that's coming up. And I think what I'm going to do is I've done this part. This is kind of like my little intro part, right? I'm going to do probably like a quick little update here on Crit Hit stuff. And then probably come back and do just a real quick intro. And then just play the interview with Daniel. You got to hear it. But if you don't want to go that far, let's do this. Right now on Kickstarter, as of today, today meaning the day when this comes out because I'm recording it before, it'll be the 7th. So today's the 7th when this comes out. And there'll be 8 days officially. When you're hearing this podcast, if you're listening to it the day that it drops, left on the Monster Rangers RPG. And here's the sort of short version. Like if you don't feel like listening to me and Daniel just kind of geek out for like over an hour, then don't. But here's what you got to know about Monster Rangers, the role-playing game, right? Monster Rangers is kind of like an alternate Earth, kind of alternate history. It takes place sort of in like in the 1900s. It's very pulpy. It's very whimsical and fun, and has a lightheartedness and just a purity to it that like you just don't see in role-playing games. I tell people I'm a one-trick pony. I do Grimdark. Like, that's what I do. I'm the Zack Snyder of fucking role-playing games. Like, when it comes to role-playing games, I'm Zack Snyder. I do one trick, and I think I'm decent at it. But you're not going to get me to do, you know, something lighthearted unless there's enough there for me to grab onto, right? There's enough there for me to fully grok, so to speak, the world. And Monster Rangers, the role-playing game, has that. Like, I really want to run it and see how whimsical I can get it and really push myself creatively. And if not, then I'll happily will hand this over to somebody else, and then I want to be the player, right? Which is kind of cool for me, right? Because, like, I never want to be the player. Like, I love being the GM. I'm a forever GM, but I'm happy about it, right? I almost never really want to play. I like playing, but I almost never, like, have a desire to. But I'll totally play this one, right? The other interesting thing was, oddly enough, Daniel gravitated towards something that I had originally planned on this first episode to talk about, was like, you know, kind of new games that I'm kind of looking into and stuff like that. I've always said that I loved Fate Accelerated more than Fate Core as a system. But then recently they came out with Fate Condensed, which sits right in the middle of Fate Accelerated and Fate Core. Fate Condensed sits right in the middle of that in terms of like complexity and how easy to run. It's very close to Fate Core. It's really almost like a streamlined version of Fate Core, more than its own separate system, the way that Fate Accelerated feels like, right? Like its own, you know, remix or something. Because it's only a couple of rules that are different, but those little things make a big difference, in to me at least, in being able to get into the game. And so I was really excited about it. Like, I actually got the little book, you know, that they put out. It's like $8 or $10 or something like that, and it's great. I want to buy a couple of them so I can bring it to the table. But Daniel got into this too, because apparently he's a Fate fan, and then he saw Condensed and he liked it. And so Monster Rangers runs on Fate Condensed, which is fucking amazing. So that's another reason to get it. So again, you got 8 days. Go on Kickstarter.com, look up Monster Rangers RPG. I'll probably put some kind of link somewhere, I don't know, and go check it out. And I think that's kind of off. I'm gonna stop this. We're gonna switch over to like another segment kind of a thing, and I want to talk about Crit Hit Year Zero, and a little bit about where that came from and what we have planned and what's going on with it and how we want to bring you all back in and see each other again and spend some time together. So we'll stop this, we'll do that little bit, and then we'll jump over into the very long Chris Hardwick-like, self-indulgent interview with Daniel Davis. Okay, real quick. So I recorded like this update, and it was like a 30-minute update, and I'm not sure I want to use that one. So I'm going to do this real quick. I'm going to give you like all the bullet points, and then I'm going to have another, you know, the next issue of the Crit Hit Audio Zine will be next week, and that'll have all the other stuff. But here's what you got to know right now. So right now, Crit Hit is going to be July 15th and 16th at the Doubletree Hilton Phoenix Mesa. So that's right off the freeway, off the I-60, and right where the Fiesta Mall used to be. So right across the street from that. It's a big, beautiful hotel. I've been there before for other conventions, and I can't believe that we're actually going to get it. And the space is awesome. We're going to do a lot of things with it. I'm going to talk about that later. But here's what you got to know about it. It's a big hotel. It's got a huge atrium, right? There's going to be 6 separate RPG areas that we're working with. One of them is going to be really big for like just fantasy RPGs. So all of you D&D people and people that are coming out of D&D for other like games that you're getting into that are fantasy games that are kind of like D&D, but you know, different and better in some ways. That's going to be an area just for you guys. And again, 6 separate areas. It's going to be very exciting. We're going to have tons of vendors this year because it's a big, giant, open atrium. So we're going to do lots of vendors. It's going to have a real market feel, which is what we wanted to do with like Winterborn. So that's going to be there. There's other ideas that were thrown around to use that space, like Robert Bucky, who's been a friend of Crit Hit like from the beginning and has become a friend of mine, is a really good people. Him and his wife are just lovely people, and they're very passionate about animals. So we're thinking about doing like an animal fundraiser or something for an animal shelter like that. And if not, we'll find another charity. But we want to do something charitable in that space because we're a community and we should do community things, right? But the vendor applications are now open, so you might see that. There's a little bit of delay in kind of getting some of that stuff back out to people, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But the short version of that is like there's a whole app that's being developed. Some of that stuff's not ready. Some just manually send out invoices to people so they can pay online with their credit cards and stuff like that. We're not taking cash for anything, but we're opening up vendors before the Kickstarter. And there's a reason for that, because when there's that many vendors, it's easier just to track everything separately. So, yeah, and plus we start our budgets work a little bit better when we can do that, right? So that's happening. Also, we already have our first guest confirmed. There's a couple of guests that we're gonna confirm up and get out, and we're gonna announce those later as we get closer to the Kickstarter, or if not the actual Kickstarter. Our swag is coming back, so the pins are already being we're in the process of getting those made right now, and I'm working with the same people that made our last pins, and it's going to be the new logo, right? So it's going to have that new logo with the jackalope on there. There's a whole story about like why there's a new logo, but basically the short version of it is that we wanted to signal that we're going back to our roots as an RPG convention by using the logo be similar to, like, to the very first year logo, which is just the words Crit Hit with an exclamation point. That's why that's there. The jackalope is there because when we did Winterborn, I wanted to do a jackalope as a mascot, and I've always loved the idea of like a little monster or cryptid as a mascot, especially something that's like kind of Arizona-esque, which is a jackalope. So that's why there's a jackalope. So the pins will be the jackalope and that new logo, which would be really cool. The keychains are coming back, so you're going to have a keychain as your physical badge, but that's just your physical badge, and there's a thing with that. So there's also going to be pint glasses. The pint glasses are coming back because we sold out of a lot of them. So yeah, we're going to have more pint glasses. We're going to look into the metal steins because those sold out like hardcore, like there's zero left of those. So much so that like we don't even have a copy of the Stein because Crystal, my wife Crystal, and Anna, who run registration, didn't realize that the display one that we had with the price on it was actually mine. That was ours that we were keeping for our house. We're keeping one for the house, and that got sold too. So they're completely sold out, but they're very expensive because everything's gone up. So we're looking at trying to get those back. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but we're going to try to get the metal Steins back. The most exciting thing is that we also have an app that we're developing. It's called Conjun. So it's like dungeon, but with a C. So Conjun. And so Conjun is an app. You don't sign up for anything and you don't have to download anything. It lives only as a web app, right? And so we get your email address. And then when you want to go into the app, you put your email address in there. It sends you a link with your password. So you don't even have to remember a password or save a password or any of that shit. You just put your email address, go to your email, click on the link, it boom, it opens it up for you. That app's going to do a couple things. Your schedule's going to be on there. You're going to sign up for RPGs on there. You're going to read the description of the games. You're going to see a little bit about the game systems that it's running. That's all on the app, and that's where you're going to do your signups. The board game library is on there as well, and so you can look up board games. You can read a description of the games, see some ratings and stuff like that. For both board games and RPGs, you can rate the games. So you can put your own ratings in these games for your own personal like database. So if you play a game at Crit Hit, like let's say you play, you know, a little, you know, you play like a really small press RPG or something that's like a little small run, like a Primal Quest, which everyone should be playing fucking Primal Quest because it's great. You can be like, what was the name of that game? Well, you look in your app and you've already saved it, Primal Quest, and maybe you put like 3 stars on it or 4 stars, you know, 5 stars because it's a 5-star game, right? So you can rate and find your games, have your own list of database of games that you've played or games that you want to play or look into. You're going to build your schedule, sign up for games on there. Your ticket is also going to be on there. So one of the things that we want to do is take away that whole crunch of going into that registration line at the beginning of the convention, right? So part of the way of combating that is this, and we haven't figured it out yet, but we're thinking about this, and we're probably going to go this way, where you don't necessarily have to go to that registration desk at first. if you watch your tickets online or through the Kickstarter, then your ticket will be on the phone itself, on the app, and you just show your GM You know, maybe it's a QR code, maybe it's an image. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but you know, it's going to be something on there. Probably a QR code, so we can see, you know, which games do better than others, or where we need to focus on some games. So the GM will kind of like sign you in, so to speak, and you get in the game, and that's how you get in. That way, the registration desk is for picking up your swag at your leisure. You can do it at the beginning of the convention, but you don't have to, and that'll get rid of some of that crunch. So that's kind of the idea there, because that's always something that I've been very uncomfortable with, and it's actually caused some problems in the past, and I want to avoid those things. And this was kind of a good solution that we're going to try. So we're going to give it a shot. Fuck it. There's also going to be a vendor directory. So with as many vendors as is going to be at Crit Hit, you know, having all those vendors is going to help pay for the convention, because the prices of fucking everything went like stupid high, right? Like, it's unbelievable. That's a whole nother episode, right? On like why it fucking sucks to deal with like hotels and the prices of venues, right? But so we're gonna have tons of vendors, and that helps pay for the convention. So hopefully you'll go and you'll shop our vendors while they're there, because if they make good money from their sales, they're gonna want to come back, which helps us actually towards one of our goals, which is we want to either keep the price where we're at, you know, last time for this year, and then next year either keep it the same or drive it down. That's the goal, is to drive the price down to attend. So we're going to try really hard with that, and part of that is having vendors. Part of having vendors is having a directory where you can shop with them after the fact. So if you don't happen to pick up something there, or they ran out or whatever, you will have a list on our website and on the app of all the vendors that will take you directly to the links. Hopefully you'll tell them, hey, I saw you at Crit Hit, so that way they want to come back. So that's really cool. There's also going to be maybe a web store for t-shirts. We've never done t-shirts because it's too expensive, and you have to gamble on and sizes and things like that. And I want to be able to like switch out designs and shit. So it becomes very cost prohibitive unless I like just specifically want to make that into like its own business of t-shirts. And I don't want to do that. So there just might be a web store where you can order t-shirts that we design. So that'll be on there as well. Raffles, so all the things like that we raffle off and price support and stuff like that, you might still get a ticket, but that ticket might be a QR code that you scan into your phone, and then that way on the app it'll say like maybe just like a number or something of who won and come pick up your stuff. So no more. And if you lose a little ticket, who cares? It's on your phone. You've scanned it, and now we can get you price support and stuff like that. We're also excited that we're working with publishers to do some sort of organized play thing, right? So some of these smaller publishers or mid-sized publishers, if you play in their games, that will earn you credit, hopefully, to get you stuff like PDFs or physical books or swag or any other kind of things that they can think of to get to you guys, because I want to expose as many of you guys to them, because right now, especially with all the shit with the OGL, this is a perfect time to get into a new game and support all these people that I've been screaming about forever that we need to support, and have them continue making cool stuff for us all. There might also be some in real life quests that are going to be handled through the app. More on that later. And then there's two parts of the app. There's Conjun, and then there's Conjun Master. Conjun Master is going to be where you actually manage the convention. So that's going to be like on my side, how I manage the convention, right? So my vendors and all the coordinating and the hotels and contracts and all that shit, that all goes into Conjun Master. But it's also going to have a portal for vendors to log in so they can get all information they need to us, and we can get all information to them. So Conjun and Conjun Master is going to be a complete suite that hopefully we get to other conventions. We're already working with, I can't say too much. We're working with at least two conventions. I can say that. We're working with at least two other conventions, possibly three, that are, and we're not even talking about Arizona. We're talking about other states to use Conjun. And we're going to see how that goes, because I want to make something that's affordable for people like us in the smaller convention scene, because the price of these things just has gone crazy. You know, some of them run $800-$900, $1,000 that you have to sync into these scheduling apps and stuff like that. So I just built my own. So we're going to try and get it out to some other conventions and have it adopted other places. And then other things you should know about is there's a new website. I wanted to update the website, something that's going to be easy for me to update quickly, easy for me to add things to. And so I did that. So that's out right now. Not everything's built on there. I'm slowly going to start putting all the stuff in there, like our directories and all that stuff. That's all going to eventually go in there. But it's out right now. That's what's going on with Crit Hit. That's what you need to know. Hopefully you'll keep an eye out for when the Kickstarter drops. Sign up for the newsletter we're doing a newsletter slash blog, right? So sign up for that thing, because I'm going to start kind of trying to put some more things out there, like more of my thoughts like I would on a blog, and maybe some gaming articles and tools and things like that I'll put on there. So sign up for that. That's it. Up next, you're going to listen to Daniel Davis from Steam Crow slash Monster Rangers. Go check out his game. It's fucking awesome. And his Kickstarter's doing really well. We're super happy for him. And Daniel, for listening to this, I'm really sorry that this is late. I opened up vendor applications. We had the interview. It just got kind of crazy. And then we went to Vegas thinking nobody was going to really pay attention that we opened up vendor slots, and it turns out people were paying attention. So we got kind of caught off guard. So I apologize for this podcast being late. Apologize to everybody else for it being so long. Next episode, next week, you guys will get more of what I originally wanted the Crit Hit Audio Zine to be, and more of that kind of format. And then hopefully we can get you guys involved in help building it out and getting your ideas and articles, so to speak, into the zine. So stay tuned for all that. That's all next week. We'll take care of that later. But anyway, right now, here's Daniel and this very long interview. But if you like those long form interviews, this is going to be for you. If not, just listen to the first couple minutes where you get the gist of what the game is about, then go check out the Kickstarter for sure. All right. Thanks. Thanks for sending me the PDFs, by the way. That was really cool. Is this it? Is this final, these PDFs that we're looking at?
Yeah, those are the ones that went to print, so that's why they're so mega big.
Okay. Yeah, they're really huge. Now, they already went to print, so the Kickstarter is just the fund, literally just to fund them then.
So, yeah. The reason is that a couple things is I hate Kickstarters where you pledge for something and then you wait a year for it to come in. I don't love that.
Yeah.
And two, I don't like fake product photos, fake product images. And I hate all that. So I really wanted to sell people, to get people to see the real thing. And I've been wanting to do an RPG since I was a kid. So I did not want to wait forever to print it.
Cool.
So yeah, it's backwards. We do everything backwards at Steam Crow.
Well, okay, so let's stop for a sec. Okay, give me the pitch. Give us the pitch of the RPG, what it is, and sort of the world, because that's what's really interesting.
The pitch is it's 1913. There are monsters in the world, but only some people can see them. Some of those people are called Monster Rangers, so they're like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, except adults that believe, study, and protect monsters. And some of the other people are monsterologists, and they are people that are from the old world. They have a lot of money and power, and they see monsters and the magic that comes along with monsters as an avenue for ultimate power, and they're in conflict. So that's kind of the basics of the deal. It's an alternative Earth, so it isn't a historic Earth. It's an alternative 1913, so things are strangely familiar, but they're not quite, normal. So Harry Houdini is the current president. The Titan, which is an airship, was just lost in 1912. There's lots of things that are similar to the real world but are different. There's a massive canyon called Coffin Canyon in the southwest that's hundreds of times larger than the Grand Canyon, and it's where the Nation of Liberty's been able to get their gold and money and stuff to help fund the taking over the entire, the West. But, they've delved too far down. They've released some poison, terrible gases. So they've had to lose that canyon and all that wealth, and bandits sneak in there and get stuff. That's the general high level of what it is.
That is super cool. I love the world that you sort of have created around this idea, which is, it's really cool, because it's not quite steampunk, right? But it feels almost like if steampunk wasn't quite as serious. I don't know, this feels more, I guess, whimsical is the thing that I'm looking for. There's sure. A word I'm looking for, but it feels more like actual exploring,
pulpy, right? It's pulpy, got a, yeah. Yeah, there's more pulp to it. And I never really ever call it steampunk, but it definitely has some bones in it. I just feel like a lot of times when I've been sold you know, this is steampunk. It wasn't. So I kind of hate to use that as a term. So I'd rather people discover that it's, you know, it has all these elements that can be steampunk, but I'm not like, this is steampunk, see?
No, yeah, no. You know,
look at the gears. Ha ha. We have dapper top hats.
There's only one color brown. That's it.
Right.
This is very pulpy. That's what it is. It's pulpy. This is exactly what it reminds me of. Because kind of like my journey through like RPGs was the thing that kind of started me doing Crit Hit. I've always talked about this, was actually like Savage Worlds. And one of the first things I got into in Savage Worlds was like pulp adventures, which made me start looking at like old serials obsessively. Mm-hmm. And this is the same, that sort of like exploratory. Yeah, that's exactly the feel for this, which is awesome.
Yeah, it took me a while to get there. So I knew I wanted an RPG in the Monster Rangers world, but I didn't know what we were going to, like, I didn't know what it was. So 3 years ago, I ran my first campaign with some pals to learn, to figure it out. And so right away, I realized, you know, like, we're not, like, we can't really dungeon, like, we could dungeon delve, but, like, what's the point of it? Like, we're, you know, and we're not going to fight monsters, really, because that's kind of unethical with our rangers. Mm-hmm. So what do we do? And so I kind of had to figure it out. But I didn't figure out the pulp edge until this summer. Last summer, I was on our camping tour with rangers in, you know, different states. And I was up in Washington and somebody's like, hey, you're going to run a game for us. I'm like, I didn't plan on it, but I thought about it. And I, for the next camp, I had put together a game and I realized, hey, I should give this a real pulp flair. That maybe that's the missing juice. And it 100% was, you know, so we have this fake company called Blappo that we developed a long time ago for fake products.
Mm-hmm.
In the Monster Rainer universe, and suddenly Blappo became the company that makes all this experimentational gear that's really terrible and explodes a lot. But also they're, you know, building inventions for the monsterologists. So they're like selling to both sides and they're giving gear to rangers to test. And anyway, it all kind of came together that way.
No, I think it fits perfectly with like one, the aesthetic of everything. It fits perfectly with the aesthetic. And then just sort of like in general, you know, if you're doing Monster Rangers, I think that just sort of goes with it, right? That sort of pulpy era of like exploring things like that. Yeah, you don't want to go around like, you know, just like, you know, hunting monsters and stuff like that. Because, you know, I like those games. Those are great. But there's a lot of those. And this is kind of a different twist. Yeah. And this is a different twist. So that's kind of cool. Let's back up for a second. So you and I have known each other, gosh, off and on, probably, what, like 10 years maybe. Right?
Yeah, probably.
We circled around, I think through like downtown Mesa is kind of like where I first mm-hmm. started talking to you and stuff. And I was fascinated by your art and stuff. And then over time, you've sort of really grown as an artist and sort of took some really big chances with your art and sort of the direction that you were going. And it's clearly paid off and stuff like that. But along with that has always been like these monsters that you've made and like, it feels like now, like this is the culmination of like everything that you've done, like all this art and the aesthetic of everything that you do, sort of like, here's this world now that everything lives in. Right. I feel like now there's a world that I can identify these monsters with.
Right.
But so RPGs isn't really like your quote unquote day job. You're a working artist. Do you want to talk a little bit about like kind of what you do and how this art started to begin with and
where
it came from and that kind of stuff?
Sure. So I went to school for fine art because there was no graphic design program. I didn't know what graphic design was. I didn't know anything about it. There was no opportunity for an illustration job. I grew up in Spokane, Washington, so I didn't really know of anyone that had ever worked in the industry of either gaming or like the industry, like as a, you know, concept artist or cartoonist or anything like that. It seemed like a million miles away. But I knew that I wanted to do art stuff, so I took fine arts because that was what I had. That was the option. And so what I lied to my parents and family to help me pay for this. And I said, I'm going to be an art teacher, but I had no intent of being an art teacher because I knew I was too selfish and too, you know, driven by my own things to be a teacher. That's a special kind of person, like Donna, my wife. Mm-hmm. So I did fine arts, and then I slowly became a graphic designer. You know, I fought my way into being a crappy t-shirt production artist and so on. And, but I learned a lot of skills, a lot of vector art skills. And I, it, you know, it took me forever, but I slowly built up those skills, became a web designer and all that. But I didn't have the confidence to like make my own stuff. So in 2004, I was a web designer for credit unions. Pretty sexy there. You can see the tie into Monster Rangers right there.
Yeah.
So I got recruited to work for a big credit union here in Arizona. So he took the job, and that was fine. And I started making cafe press designs, like print-on-demand crappy t-shirts of cartoon monsters. Bunch of just random cartoon monsters. A Gollum t-shirt and a vampire, you know, just, I don't know. I was just fucking around, messing around. And I did that. I made about 7K though, doing that as a side gig for fun.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Just when it was fun. And I was learning a little bit about business in that, like an example is if you make like cafe press worked at that time, you would say you'd buy a shirt for 20 and then whatever profit you made, you got to keep. So let's say I charged $21, which is what most people did. You made $1, but I learned and kept hearing that if you charged $5, you'd do more, you know, you'd do better. And so I ended up, you know, making $7 a shirt and that was way better. Anyway, that's learning.
Right.
Well, we finally had a chance to, we finally had some pocket money. We could finally go on a vacation. So I'm like, hey, let's go to the San Diego Comic-Con, Donna. And she's like, oh, okay. And so we go and we meet all these indie artists that are, well, they were guys that worked at Pixar and, you know, all the different animation studios that, you know, you'd go, hey, you work at Pixar? I'm like, yeah, but, you know, that's just a day job. Well, you know, that's a job. But what I'm passionate about is this book I made. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Because I thought you'd have to go, you know, you'd have to work for the industry before you could, you know, do your own stuff. And a lot of people think that way too with fan art, for example, like, oh, I got to draw Disney and then eventually I can draw my own stuff.
Right.
But what happened was we met a few people and then Donna leans over at one point and goes, you know, you could make a haiku monster book. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I like that idea. So before we even left the show, I was doing sketches for our first book called Caught Creatures, which is a monster haiku book. And so before we left the con, I'm like, you know, next year, let's be here with a table. See? And which is, you know, crazy and all that. And, you know, still had my job. And so we went home and I worked on Caught Creatures every day after work with a long commute. You know, we probably hour and a half a day at least commute. And because, you know, we live way north of Phoenix and we work downtown. So that was rough.
Yeah.
We had a little kid. And so at the time. And so anyway, I was like, I don't think I can do it. So I just focused on one page at a time. Just going to draw a page at a time. Draw a monster, write a haiku. And in 3 months, it was done. And I was like, whoa, I got something done. Applied for Emerald City, or not Emerald, but San Diego Comic-Con and APE, which was the Alternative Press Expo in San Francisco, and also WonderCon, which was in San Francisco too.
Okay, yeah.
And we got in. And so the next year we printed books. We just paid for it. Printed books and showed up and started doing our thing. So at that time I was doing basically cartoon monster art. So I would basically go, here's a monster I want to draw. I'm going to make a print of it, you know? And so I'd made prints and then the next year we did our second book and that was Clawberry, which is about a monster girl who gets her eye stolen. It's like a folk tale. She's on a quest to get it back. But again, I'm just kind of making random monster things and not really connecting the products very well together. So, you know, I would just kind of make whatever I was into, but that was about it. You know, like they were often unrelated. Sometimes they were related. Occasionally there'd be, you know, things in the public domain. I would do like, you know, Nosferatu or Metropolis or something. So I did some of those posters to try to, you know, entice people to come over.
Right.
And I was working really, really hard and working really, really hard at trying to get out of this day job for the credit union because I'd seen the other side and I was like, I want to be a creative for a living. That's my calling.
Right.
And so luckily I had that crappy 7 years of doing t-shirts where, you know, I was paid nothing and I was working my ass off, but I was really getting skills. It was my real education, you know, where I was learning how to be a craftsman about what I was doing and learning about what was illegal in the art world and, you know, what not to do and then, you know, all that. And so it took us about 7 years to get out of my job. So we did shows. We just reinvested all the money we ever made while I had a job until we had, well, and we started Monster Commute, my webcomic that I did for about 2.5 years, where I started combining, you know, hey, let's do world building and, you know, a comic, you know, monster cartoon world that was kind of bleak and, you know, dystopia, but also kind of light and funny too and quirky right. and all that. So anyway, yeah, so we did all that and things were going decently and, you know, things were going well. We had a massive, we were one of those artists that had pioneered the print wall, you know, which I probably right. should apologize for, but we had, you know, a print wall that was like 20 feet wide and like 17 feet tall with hundreds of prints on it. And then the print market collapsed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, it collapsed hard.
What year was that? That was probably like
2016.
2016 or so. Yeah.
2016 was the peak of the prints. So by 2017, it was, you know, everybody jumped on that wagon, and cons too were way big at that point. So, so anyway, and so it became where, you know, I had a print wall, but I didn't have Darth Vader on it because I don't own Darth Vader. So I didn't, you know, so everyone that had Darth Vader won, you know, they each, you know, whatever, they'll split that Darth Vader money 20,000 ways. But, and so, you know, we had to kind of figure out what we were. So we bought a t-shirt press and we started printing our own shirts, which was cool. I knew we'd want to do that someday. And we were trying to figure out how to be, like, at this point we'd been, you know, Steam Crow for quite a while, but we're trying to figure out how to be better, like how to be more important in someone's life than, you know, sell them a print, you know, or selling them a button. Like, that's cool, but that's just commerce, you know. And right. I'm like, man, I want people to care about what we're doing. And we had people that did care, but I was like, man, how are we gonna do this where we had, you know, if we could get some of these people to come back, you know, if they were happy and they would buy from us again, that would change our life. And so, you know, with any of these kind of problems, you have to think of it in two ways. Side one is the business problem, like what's the business problem you're trying to solve, and then side two is the creative one of how to make it interesting and real, like not just, you know, wow, how to make money. See, now let's add, you know, now add color, you know, not that. But, right. you know, you got to be true to yourself on both sides.
Sure.
And you have to have the business side so it works, right? You've got to right. have that side. But you've got to have the other side, like, totally. It's got to be a core thing that you care about, like, strongly, you know, because you've got to right. get through it. You know, you can't just go, well, I'm going to make, like, our food prints is a great example. We did these quirky kawaii food prints that are puns, right?
Yeah.
Those things sold like gangbusters. But you know what? That's not me. That's just me goofing off with kawaii food things. Like, there's nothing unique or, you know, or there's nothing you can build a career on in that. So anyway, we couldn't figure it out.
I mean, there's plenty of people that do, though, right? Like, there's plenty of people that just sort of, like, take things like that, and like that's what they do. They make prints of these things, and they come up with ideas sure. of, like, you know,
it's poop, you know, this, like, time.
Yeah, or, you know, it's a watermelon or whatever, and like
sure, but that wasn't, like, whole, for me though. Like right. that's the thing is, yeah, I was having fun doing it. Like, it was like, it's like, hey, this is funny, so, you know, but it wasn't like, this isn't my core, you right. know. And I knew that it had to be that.
But so, that's part of like making a living though, right? Is like you have to sort of, like, that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Is, you know, you want to be creative, you want to sort of do these things, but at the same time, you got to pay the bills at a certain point. And so you yes. do these things, you still like them, but they're not really like the main focus of your passion, but you right. know that they'll bring in a little bit of money, and that gives you time to work on the, you know,
yeah.
the real things, quote unquote, right?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And we definitely used it in that way. For sure. But, you know, the bigger goal is how to make things that you're really passionate about pay the bills, you know?
Right.
And so it took a long time of, like, going, well, what are we? Are we coffee monsters? Is that our thing? Is it all about cartoon monsters drinking coffee? I'm like, nah, there's no legs to that. What is it? I don't know. And, you know, I'd moved here. I'm a lifelong gamer. I started gaming in like 82. I went to a Catholic school because I was a terrible student. And so my parents for seventh grade said, "Hey, we're going to send you a Catholic school because it's small. There's only like 12 kids in your grade." So I go to this Catholic school. And so at once I'm learning about the Catholic, like I didn't know about Catholicism. I wasn't a church kid. So I'm learning all this crazy, crazy Warhammer 40K church stuff. And then I go down at lunch and there are these kids that have polyhedron dice and they're playing a game. And I was like, you can play with monster stuff. And like, it blew my mind and I was hooked. So anyway,
that's like the '80s. You're like, you're in a Catholic school in the '80s trying to play like D&D, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's like probably one of the worst scenarios you can go
into. It was great. It was so good. So by the end of that year, I was running games there, you know, that's like awesome. That was, yeah. So,
like, but that's like the height of like the satanic panic and like, yeah. Like it's so dangerous, right? Like it's just
underground. My mom was like, "Oh, Danny, you don't know what you're playing with there." I'm like, "Yeah, dude, I got the dice and I got the expert and the basic set, mom. It'll be fun."
Yeah. Yeah. It says expert. I'm good. I remember during that time, that was a thing. So my aunt was, you know, very religious and she used to work at a Christian bookstore. My gaming actually, I'm from LA, but my gaming actually kind of, a lot of my geekdom stems from Arizona because my aunt lived out there at the time in Cottonwood and managed a little Christian bookstore. Ooh. And so, you know, we'd come to visit and there's nothing to do. So I'd stir around and read comics and that got me into comics. And then, you know, D&D was a thing. And my aunt didn't let my cousins play D&D because it was, you know, it was this game and you're basically writing your kids off to Satan if you let them play this game. And so there was a lot of that. I remember my mom just like not understanding quite where my aunt was coming from. Cause she's like, "He's playing with books with his friends. I don't think there's anything wrong with it."
Oh yeah.
But she just saw it. I was like, "Look, he's playing with books. Like there's nothing in there. Like that's ridiculous." But so I never had that part of it, but there was always that sneaking around that kind of, you have to kind of keep it cool around some of the grownups about what you're doing because there was a stigma to it. So.
Yeah. I think they were just completely unaware. They didn't know what was going on. So it was fine. You know?
Yeah. Just let you go with it.
Yeah, they didn't know. Yeah. So it was great. But so what happened is that as we were trying to figure out what was the new Steam Crow, like what are we going to turn into? Like what I want, like what could we be? It finally, we decided to visit my mom who lives in Spokane or Deer Park, Washington, so north of Spokane. So she set us up in this tent, a canvas tent, in the woods. So they had like 300 acres. And so they have half of its fields for hay and then half of its pine forest. And so she set up this basically glamping thing, which is like a deck with this canvas tent and antique furniture outside. And me and Donna were in there just brainstorming. And of course we're around this tent and finally, I'm like, what if we had like a way to reward people for coming back to Steam Crow? Like, what if we gave them like a pin or, well, that's kind of weird, but what about a little patch or something, you know, like Boy Scouts and mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And so we started talking about that and like, oh, that's very interesting. But like, you know, what if it's like Boy Scouts that believed in monsters? Oh yeah. And so I drew some hexagon patches and a bat master patch that fit on top. And so that was so we're like, well, so the mechanical side, the business side is, well, what if we, you know, again, make events, you get a badge for that, or you make missions, you get a badge mm-hmm. for that, or if you, you know, make a product, maybe a badge comes with it. So, and then they'd, you know, like they'd maybe come back and collect these badges or something.
So,
maybe.
So I was going to ask you about this. So what year is this? Because this is kind of bizarre, but like what year did you start really thinking and implementing? Because we're talking about the Monster Rangers, right?
And yeah.
What year was that?
Maybe 2015.
2015? Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what I did was we had the idea, and what we did is we did our contour that year. Mm-hmm. When I saw Super Steam Crow people, I'd be like, "Hey, psst, come here. So what if I have an idea here, but I want you to tell me if you think it's dumb and you need to be honest, you can tell me if it's dumb. What if we made a thing called the Steam Crow Scouts, and it's like scouting, but it's Steam Crow, and it's monsters instead of whatever those other guys do. And basically, I would just kind of pitch them. Mm-hmm. And all of them said, yeah, that sounds like something I could be into. And so that next year, it like the fan fusion when it was in the one of the fan fusions, I think, mm-hmm. was like where we rolled it out. We like finally let people know, hey, there's the Steam Crow Scouts thing and we're going to do it. And here's the story. And I realized that it needed to be about monsters and it needed to be really based on what I'd learned from Monster Commute world building. It needs to be like role-playing kind of setup because that's I knew that was a passionate core of what I'm into. And so like I'm like, how do I infuse that more into our what we do?
Right.
So we made branches, which are kind of like classes, you know, so you can be a different yeah. kind of Monster Ranger. And, you know, and I'm like, well, I love monsters, so it's got to be about saving, protecting monsters, not killing and hunting them, which already just automatically made it pretty much different than every other thing.
For sure. Because
it's always, every time, so there's a bunch of different scouting plus monster things out there, mm-hmm. from Girl Scouts to, you know, all kinds of stuff. But it's almost all, you know, hunt the monsters, you know, watch out for the zombies.
Right.
And so I'm like, well, you know, let's turn that upside down. But we still need some good baddies, though, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, we had to really cook that up to make that interesting. Anyway, so once we got the business side done, then I let my, you know, my imagination roll on the other side and make it something that I'm really, you know, passionate, interested in, you know? So that worked out well in that. So we had our first event at a, you know, again, at this con, and 26 people came with uniforms. Now, they are all different. Scouting knockoff uniforms, and most of them were infringing on the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts of America. So right away we're like, oh, I didn't know we were going to have costumes. I mean, uniforms. And I didn't know there you guys were going to do this because I thought this was going to be like a subset of Steam Crow. I thought it'd be like our fan group or something. And right. I don't mean that like a Worship Me fan group, but like our core yeah. best people.
Sure, sure.
And so what happened was, is I realized pretty fast after a few shows that, you know, if I had a 20 by 20 island and I had some scouting stuff on one part of it, people were entering the booth there. I was like, wait a minute, this is the most attractive part of what we're doing. So maybe this is what we need to be. But I'm like, nah, that's crazy. But then it really, it got proven really fast. And then, you know, I tell people, yeah, we're a fake scouting community. And then we had a ranger, now a ranger, with us. And she's like, oh, we're real. And I'm like, oh, I guess we are real. So I can't say we're fake anymore. Because I was like, yeah, this just the scouting part's the pretend part. You know, like, you know, it's just our community. And then they were like, when are we going to go camping? And we're like, no, we're not going. You crazy kids. We're not going camping. What are you talking about? We're not doing that. That's nuts. So, you know, I had to admit, it kind of made sense. If you're saying you're a scout thing, then you better do scout stuff. So
yeah, yeah.
We did a camp out. Like, listen, we're going to do one. We'll do it one time. This is it. So we do it. And like 100 people came. And, you know, it wasn't free. Like, it was a paid thing you had to come to do. And like, people came. And it was great. And you know what? It was magic because it isn't just at the con where I'm trying to sell stuff. Like, mm-hmm. it gave me time to go, hey, man, I've seen you a whole bunch of times, but I've only had 5-minute snippets once a year to say hi. What yeah. are you into? Let's talk. And the coolest thing was I already knew that our core people, I liked them. Like, I wanted to be friends with them. Well, those are the people that come to camp, you know? And so, yeah. so what happened was you get that magic of getting away from your TVs and world and, you know, having a meal with somebody and chatting with them, getting to know them better. And I'm like, wow, yeah, we're going to be friends now. And so that's what happened. So eventually we realized that we needed to turn the whole brand upside down. Now, Steam Crow still exists. It's our home studio, but it's not something I promote as our brand anymore. That's Monster Rangers, which we renamed because Scouts have an incredibly powerful position with their trademark. And for any time that we use Scouts, we'd be in a fragile position of that being taken away from us. So
sure.
So I study this stuff, right? I understand IP law, but what I didn't understand was that Boy Scouts of America literally has a trademark that's stronger than one that you and I can get. Oh, yeah. It's granted by Congress. They've already won forever. You will never win against them. So I had to swallow the hard pill of after we printed our first handbook and we made an album, the Klein Redback album, we had to change our name. So that was really painful, but it was the Band-Aid we knew we'd have to tear off at some point. So like, let's just do it now. So anyway, from now on, I'm going to call it Monster Rangers. But
well, let me ask you this, because that's like really interesting, right? Like, I don't know. I always feel like it's those limitations that help you grow. Like,
1,000%.
Yeah. It's those things that like, it's what you can't do that really kind of pushes you. And totally. So like when I saw Monster Rangers, right? Cause I remember Monster Scouts, but when I saw Monster Rangers, like, oh, that sounds so much better. Like, yeah. I didn't know that I wanted it to sound better, but it just did. Right. And
yeah. And that's one of our biggest challenges too, is that like, you know, you see the scouting thing and then people go, oh, it's for kids. And so Rangers helps you tell the story of, no, this is different than that. Cause most of our members are adults. Some of those adults come with kids. That's cool. And kids are welcome, but it's not a kiddie thing. Like, you don't drop your kids off at a Monster Rangers camp or whatever. So yeah, I think the Rangers thing helps.
So, and I think it's just like just thematically, like it fits better, right? Like it gives you this sort of like this idea of like a guardian or something like that, right? Like Rangers and parks are there to protect the parks and keep people safe and just kind of like an authority, good figure, right?
Yeah. You know, I've been convinced now over time. I wasn't when we made the change, cause I was like, oh, I'm so mad, you know, but I think it works now. I think we made it work somehow.
I love I love when like something that, you know, should hold you back actually ends up being like the best thing to push you forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a massive change though for us, you know, that switch. Cause we had to, you know, at that point we were rolling with 20 by 20 island booths, giant booths that were largely driven by print sales. And so that, you know, that was changing. The cons themselves were changing too, from, you know, being, I don't want to be this wet blanket, but like the people in the Mesa Con at the Cactus Con, you know, we're so much more nerds and more into it than the people today that are at cons are when it's more mainstream. Sure. So again, this isn't putting anybody down. It's just a different kind of thing. So.
Yeah. And it's hard to talk about that, right? Like it's not easy to talk about that because people get really defensive about it, but you can't ignore that. Like the core group of people that would do these things
when it wasn't cool.
When it wasn't cool, yeah, it's a little bit of a different vibe when like all these things exist in culture, like they're just cultural touchstones now, right?
Right.
Like my mom knows who Iron Man is, and like that's not something that I thought I would ever say.
yeah. So we had to figure out what, like, first off, we had to make product. Like there wasn't any, we had like, you know, a dozen badges in a bag. And so we had to like go, well, we want to, you know, we should have a handbook. Well, that took a long time to get to, you know, between everything else. You know, we need to have a uniform. Well, how are we going to do that? I don't know. And so we had missteps along the way and, you know, stuff to figure out. Oh, how do we make our booth? Like, I'm proud of all the booths we've had, but like the Steam Crow booths weren't Monster Ranger booths. You know, like how do we make that? Like, what's that going to be? And oh, man. So it was a lot of... about 3 years of transition time where we were like building products, building stories, learning about the Rangers ourselves, just trying to figure out what it was and, you know, what it could be. And then, you know, listening to our people, you know, they'd tell us what they thought it was. And those were usually good advice, you know, good piece of advice. And so, and then eventually we stumbled on like our booth design, which was really great. Cause we were doing just dumb stuff and I knew it was dumb, but there was no option. Like, you know, we had this wall, but then we're trying to sell t-shirts. So we're like, make another wall in front of the other wall of t-shirts, you know, like it's all just effed up. Like it's just, we'd have a tent on a corner that said info. So people come like, do you know what time we can get a Peter May autograph? I'm like, no, go away. Why are you here? So anyway, it took us a long time to figure it out. But anyway, so that's all good. So then, you know, we finally built this thing and then finally, you know, got to a point where we could start, you know, figuring out what this game was going to be. So, yeah, it's a long, long journey just to get to there.
It is. And there's all kinds of things that sort of go into that, right? There's so much more history of sort of like what you've done. And it's kind of interesting because like some of that actually kind of ties into stuff that's happening today. So you started off doing like basic prints and that became very successful for you, where you could start thinking about earning a living doing that. But then there was a definite point that I remember, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, how like it's a thing that I talk about to different people about how this guy figured it out. And you had written a post, I don't remember what year it was, but you wrote a post on your blog about how you were no longer going to do other people's IP and mashups and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's almost like at the time, almost suicide, right? Like, because at the time that's what sold for everybody, not just you, but like everybody was making a sure. living, making weird mashups or making prints of, you know, popular characters in pop culture.
Right. I will say we probably at most had about 10% of fan art though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was probably our max at that point. But yeah, it just felt like a couple things happened. Is one is that we were, you know, getting bigger and I knew we couldn't, you know, sustain that stuff. And two, we became licensed Disney artists. So we were able to do some licensed Disney stuff. And they picked us because they didn't see fan art on our table, you know? So
right.
That kind of made sure that we kept our nose clean for that because, you know, that wasn't going to work.
So I didn't know that. So did that happen before you had made that decision? Like you'd gotten the Disney?
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay, no. Disney was after. No, Disney was after I'd really pulled back from pretty much any fan art stuff.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to get to. It's like you made this decision. You took a chance on something that like clearly was the easy way to pull in some bucks to help you. Obviously, you know, it takes a little bit of money so you can have the room to work on the good stuff. Right. We talked about that, but you took that chance and then you just focused on your own original art, your own original characters.
Yeah.
And that paid off because Disney came knocking.
Yeah. And so
how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was pretty simple in that so the Wonderground Gallery is this theme park and Disney downtown Disney. It's a theme park store, right? That's all, you know, art that's, you know, made by artists, not Disney artists, but just like different artists that they pick. And so they approached us basically. They'd seen us at a show or two and then said, hey, you know, would you like to be an artist that does this stuff? And we're like, yeah, you know, sure. Let's give it a try, you know? And so we did. At first, we just did, in fact, it took a while to get to that because basically they said, hey, we have this downtown gallery and we want you to be a guest artist at it. So we're not doing any licensing at all. They're just letting us have our stuff in their store that they're selling. And we did that a bunch of times, like, I don't know, like, I think 6 different years or something, like a bunch. Yeah. So basically we just drop off all the stock and then I would sign stuff. And basically I made this little postcard that was blank and I would draw monsters for people trying to get them to, you know, like, hey, I'll draw a monster for you for free. And they're like, well, will you draw the guy from Monsters, Inc.? I'm like, nope, can't. Illegal. Also, don't want to, but yes, can't.
Yeah.
So they won't let me because there's a guy there that does it, you know,
in the
store. And also, I don't want to be that guy. Like, I don't draw that stuff. I don't know how to draw those guys. So that was awkward and weird, but it was great because it was a validation, right?
Mm-hmm.
If Disney says we're good, then people believe we're good. So our life got a little easier after that in that, you know, we had some income coming from that. And then our stuff was in a store for a whole month. So, you know, they'd sell, you know, it was awesome. So we did that a bunch. And then after a while, they're like, hey, you've done this like 5 years or what, 4 years or something. How about you? Do you want to do a license piece? And so, here's how it works. You basically, they go, okay, so don't draw anything. You have to tell us what you want to draw. And then we okay it with legal and everybody. And then you can do a sketch and then we'll okay that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's real weird, but they don't want to see any art at all. So I did I took a Walt quote, which is really just an Imagineer quote that says, if you Dream It, You Can Do It. And so I made this Mickey Mouse thing. And so I said, hey, I want to do this print with Mickey Mouse. See? And it's, and they said, yeah. And then I'll do, I was doing cereal prints a lot, like monster cereal. Mm-hmm. So I did a Maleficent Morning cereal. So it's, you know, so cereal print.
Right.
And so I got those licensed with them. They okayed it. And so then they sold those for like, I don't know, probably a year or so. Mm-hmm. And so the way it works is they own your, so in 5 years, they own the artwork outright. So okay. They don't have to pay you. They can use it forever. And you get a 10%. You get a 10% commission, I think it is. So you get 10% after all their costs. So anyway, so I'd get, you know, you get these spreadsheets of the sales and it doesn't make any sense. You're like, okay, well, I don't understand what's happening. But we just use that money to help fund Steam Crow. And after doing that a bunch, we were like, so we did four, we did those two pieces. Then we did a couple, like a Mickey and a Minnie popcorn and corn dog food thing. And they put the other prints on t-shirts and stuff. And anyway, we did that, but we're like, yeah, this is not really what we are though. Like, so it's cool. It's fun, but you know, I don't know. It's not what I want to be. And you know, and as we were discovering the Rangers, it really wasn't, you know, it was just a kind of a conflict, not a conflict, but it was just a different direction. So
yeah, it just doesn't line up. Right.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't line up. So it was good to do when we did it. And I'm glad we did it and all that. It was great, but then we moved on. So yeah, so we did that. And so, and you know, after that experience, I was like, yeah, man, we're not about other people's IP, you know?
Yeah.
And the other reason to do it, you know, everyone, it's so funny because you hear people giving advice, right? And they're like, well, you've got to do it. You have to do fan art. And then you can, you know, when you get popular, you can slide over to your own stuff. I don't think that happens very often. Like it happens very, very rarely.
Right.
Because Darth Vader is always going to be more popular than the thing you make up. I don't know. You know, like it's impossible to eclipse that.
Of course.
And if you have the Darth Vader on your wall with all your stuff, they're going to always look at Darth Vader and go, well, where's the, you know, where's the 3PO print? Where's the Lobot print that you've been, you know?
Right.
Because everyone loves Lobot. But anyway, it just makes more sense to get that stuff off your wall. So you can talk about what you're into. And then, you know, if that artwork and the content speaks to the person in front of your booth, you can actually connect on a higher level, like a real level, you know, like, you know, oh, so you, you know, oh, you were an Eagle Scout. Oh, that's amazing. Blah, blah, blah. Or, you know,
yeah,
whatever it is.
Yeah. You get them talking about sort of like their experiences and stuff.
Right.
And that's like, that's super fascinating, right? Like the idea that you, you know, you took a chance on what you know is going to work, right? To help you achieve the goal, which is to do this for a living. And right. Then, you know, just by stubbornly sticking to it and basically shedding known money that's coming in from like doing Darth Vader prints or whatever, just focusing on your stuff. Like it pays off because like eventually Disney comes knocking, right? That, so that helps you get a little bit more breathing room. You develop and really start figuring out what you want to do with the monsters in that world and everything. Like you had more room to sort of cultivate what eventually is becoming this sort of Monster Rangers world, right?
Right.
And that's what I was saying. It's like these books really feel like now I can see everything that's happening in these worlds with these little characters and things that are out there.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. 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 It's a nutty thing. So yeah, I think the core takeaway really is just to make sure that, you know, it's, you know, you're doing stuff that's true to your real, you know, your core interest and not following money. Right. Cause you can go so many weird places. If you're just chasing the money part of it, you've got to be, you know, smart about it. And of course you've got to make money somehow, but I think it's, lie to go, well, you have to do fan art to do anything. And I'm like, well, you're basically just kind of joining what everyone else does. You're, you know, you're kind of, you know, you want to be different than everyone else, ideally, sure. You know, to stand out. So yeah, I don't know. It's a weird, weird thing, you know?
Well, it's kind of relevant, right? Because like it's relevant today, right? Especially like in the last couple weeks of doing this, like all the stuff with OGL is blowing up. Right. Mm-hmm. But so one of the things that I, you know, think about or you know, try and come across on social media sometimes is that like I think this is a really interesting time because, you know, for 20 years people have basically piggybacked off of the OGL, and then with fifth edition you know, what, 10 years now, I think, almost for the fifth edition, or 8 years or something. It's really easy just to put something with 5e on it and you're going to just make money.
Yeah.
Right. Like I've joked that I'm going to write anything and just slap a 5e on it and throw it out there and just let my Kickstarter make like 10 grand. Right. Because it's really easy to sort of do that. And then now that you're having all these publishers sort of move away from that and sort of forging their own things, I think there's a lesson there, right? Like, I think there's a thing there where you're kind of a use case of like, no. If you just kind of stick to what you want to do, you'll find that audience in that world, right? Like, those people are there.
Right, right. Like, well,
like, I don't think people, like, when you're doing conventions and stuff like that, I don't think there's people coming in. I'm sure there's you have your fans, but your fans started already at those conventions and you made them shift to include your work as their fandom. So there wasn't like random people coming in off the street necessarily going, I'm looking specifically for this guy and his art, right? It was more like there's all these people here and you sort of already took that fan base and then you sort of shift them over to your stuff.
Right.
And I think there's a lesson there for like some of these publishers, right? Where like they're going to stop doing D&D and they're going to start doing sort of like their own works and seeing how that kind of turns out.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be interesting to see, you know, how it all goes. I just, to talk about the OGL a little bit, I think it's really interesting that I'm pretty sure the Wizards of the Coast people aren't for this, right? It's got to be the corporate engine at the top with Hasbro, because it's so insane. Like, the whole goal of, well, we want everyone to play online, see, and pay $30 a month, and that's what we want them to be. I'm like, well, that's a video game, like... You know, that's cool, but I think you're not even understanding, like, why we get together to game. Like, it's about, you know, it's fun to see your friends in real life and to play and to eat the pizza together and, you know, do all that stuff. Like, that's a communal experience. And, you know, granted, we've had to play online a fair amount these days, but I still consider in person the premier way to do it, you know?
It is. I think people are now comfortable with playing online where they weren't before, but I think the goal is still to get together with people, because that's really how these games shine, is spending time with other people having fun.
Yeah, and maybe more so because of, you know, all these online experiences we're having. You know, that's, there's still value in the meet spaces.
I think kind of a side effect of this, I think is kind of cool though, is like now you have a whole generation of kids, right? Like all these like Gen Z kids that are really into like D&D, I think they got their first taste of the power that they have, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think you and I both come like, Generation X, where it's really easy to ignore us. There's not a lot of us. Like, we're not really economically powerful enough to move anything. And we've sort of always known this, right?
Right.
But now you have a force of nature, so to speak, like this huge demographic, these huge numbers of people that sort of revolt against you and literally have changed the course of a, you know, multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah.
Just by sheer force of will. Like, these kids, you know, were up in arms about all this, and they made them relent on every single point of this OGL.
Right, right.
And it's like, I think, oh, this is where it starts. Like, this is their first taste of like, hey, you know what? you can do things. I think there's a lot of positives to it. But for me, because we've always done, you know, I've always pushed Crit Hit as like more indie RPGs, right? I started Crit Hit because I didn't like 4th edition when I played it. I wasn't a big fan of it. I'm more of a fan of it now than I was when it came out. Mm. But it wasn't for me. Pathfinder wasn't really for me. I had already been going down the road of like finding other systems to run the games that I wanted to play. And eventually that left me to Savage Worlds, and that opened my brain. Like, that just blew my brain away of like how games could work. Ooh. And I started going down this deep rabbit hole of like all these other games, and eventually that led to a Crit Hit being a thing, because I wanted to play the games that I wanted to play, not the games that everybody else was playing.
Sure.
So I'm happy about it from the standpoint of like, now there's all these people who are finally giving a voice or giving a chance to some of these other games.
I hope a lot of people try some new stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Even if it's just fantasy stuff.
Right, yeah. Yeah, fantasy is cool.
So let's talk about using. Yeah. Well, I don't want to cut you off, but let's talk about that since we're kind of like on games and stuff like that and what people are playing. You actually, when I saw this, I knew you were doing Fate, and I just assumed you're doing Fate Core, but you're doing Fate Condensed. Yeah. So that's when I saw Fate Condensed, I fucking fell in love with it.
Yeah,
it's so good. So what made you kind of shift towards Fate Condensed? So that's kind of a chance too, right? Because Fate Core is really sort of the safe bet, right?
Sure.
And even though Evil Hat themselves, I think the new Dresden is Fate Condensed. That right. They're going to do or they have done. But why did you pick a Condensed over, say, Core?
Well, first off, you know, like Fate, Core, and Condensed are almost the same beast, right? They're mm-hmm. really close to being the same thing. It's really the, you know, it's the stress tracker is different. And then, you know, they encourage you to use, you know, different style of initiative. But otherwise, mm-hmm. it's pretty much the same thing. You know, so for me, I liked the new stress track way more. And yeah, and I'm gonna I'll tell you why I got to Fate, because I think that's important to some degree. Is so my gaming journey, and I'll keep it short, like everybody, started D&D, mm-hmm. but by 86, first edition still, I switched to RuneQuest. I used RuneQuest for like the next 12 years at least. So RuneQuest was my core skill-based system. And so I was way into RuneQuest. And so Garrus, my first campaign setting, which is not online anymore, but was this massive, massive thing in terms of the website itself and the scale of it all. It was all done in RuneQuest. So percentage system again. So then I discovered, but I was finding that I was having some problems with, like, you know, it's just straight percentages. So you're still like as apt to fumble as you were to succeed. And that was always weird to me, because I'm like, wait a minute, like you're an amazing swordsman, but like your fumble and the kid that just barely picked up a sword and, you know, he rolls, you know, his success and it's critical, but somehow those are, I don't know, it just didn't make sense to me that, you know, the way some of the dice are falling. And so I tried to, like, I recharted like how the dice rolls were, so that it would be like your average as a swordsman. If you're really good, the worst you could fail would be like okay, you know, versus devastatingly bad. Because I'm like, you're like an expert swordsman. So I built this chart that would it was just stupid, but it basically did what Fudge was doing with their four dice, right?
Right.
So they've got this thing called the ladder, and you've got skills on that ladder, and you roll pluses and minuses, and it moves it up and down the ladder. Well, I loved the simplicity of it, and it was getting to the same place I was with my stupid, dumb chart. And so I jumped over to Fudge in, like, I don't know, like 2000 or 98 or I don't know, something like that.
That is like a deep cut, because, like, nobody was playing Fudge, right? Like, it was so obscure. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And so, in fact, I was even on the same user groups as the Fate dudes. Like they were there talking about Fudge with me. And so I was doing that. And then I ended up doing, I got involved with Fudge. I designed the Fudge logo. I designed some covers for Grey Ghost Games, which was the big Fudge publisher. Huh. And so, like, GM Secrets and Incognita and stuff like that. I was designing logos and covers for them. And then I did some interior, like, cartography for, I don't even know if the, I don't think the company's around anymore anyway. And then I designed the Catherine Kurtz Daenerys. Is that what it's called? Her 11 kingdoms. There's a map. So I designed this whole giant illustrated map thing. Anyway, so I did a little bit of industry stuff until I realized, I'm like Grey Ghost, they treated me really, really well. But their pay was like, so I started doing work for other publishers and the pay was like so bad. I was like, oh man, there's no point.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we'll pay you $20 for an illustration. I'm like, $20 or a cartography. We're going to make a map for $20.
Yeah. I remember I heard somewhere, it was on a podcast or something, some publisher made a joke that I like repeat all the time, is that you can make, you know, dozens of dollars in the RPG industry. Like, oh my gosh. Dozens of dollars to be made. And I was like, yeah, that's, it's 'cause it's a really thin margin
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. So then anyway, so I'm all on this Fudge kick, but you know, Fudge had all these problems because no one, you know, Fudge wasn't a game system as much as and Fate kind of has the same problem, is it, you know, it's a, hey, you can do magic this way or this other way or this other way or this other way. Yeah. And people I just want to buy a game that I can, you know, fight monsters in the dungeon. And so they didn't have that. And so anyway, so I was, as I told you off camera here, you know, I was working on my Monster Commute, which was this comic I did for a couple of years online. And I was making our RPG for that and in Fudge. And me and my buddy Steven, we were working hard on it together. And like, you know, the page count got so big that Google Docs was like, this is the maximum that you can have for the Google Docs.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a massive amount of stuff. And then at that point, Fate comes out. And I ignored it for a while. And then finally, you know, eventually I'm like, oh, I should see what this Fate thing's about because everyone keeps talking about it. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's getting bigger than Fudge. How could that be with that great name Fudge? And so, you know, I picked up a copy and I was like, oh, yeah. These guys, they know what they're doing. This is clean. This is clean and good. And it still uses my dumb force, you know, plus minus dice. And
yeah.
And I was, so I became a believer. And so anyway, I knew, so I run everything I run, it's always in Fate and it's just me. Sure. Like I don't have the lifespan. I don't have the brain power to learn more systems and it does everything I need it to do really well. And I like cinematic things. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about like, hey, we're not trying to simulate reality at all. We're trying to simulate the movies on your table. And I was like, yeah, that speaks to me perfectly. And so, you know, I only have a couple genres that I run, and one is like this industrial fantasy kind of stuff. So, and I do that, no one's seen it, but like I've world built on this other thing called Maelstros. It's a world of a maelstrom. And anyway, I run stuff in there, and then usually some retro sci-fi pulpy goofy stuff, and then Monster Rangers. So
which Fate does perfectly. Have you run into the thing where, so Fate is interesting, right? So Fate is similar to like PBTA, some Powered by the Apocalypse stuff, where because it is so narrative, if you have people that have sort of grew up and have only played like D&D or Pathfinder or Traveler or something that's kind of like crunchier rule, and you get them to the table to play something more narrative, they're kind of lost. Like they don't quite know how to navigate things. Has that happened to you?
Not so much, but I really, so I introduce a lot of people, like a lot of rangers I introduce to gaming basically. So they don't know.
Yeah.
they don't know what to get into.
Yeah. So I said that about Powered by the Apocalypse, right? Like when I was trying to run Dungeon World for people, I was like, the people who do better at Dungeon World are people who've never played a game before.
Yeah.
It's people who have played D&D for 20 years that they sit down and they're kind of like, what is this?
Well, even back in the D&D days, I kind of preferred playing with people that weren't D&D heads because they were kind of like not very fun to play with a lot, you know, and it's not everybody at all. Like there's a ranger that just joined my game last year who's been playing since 78. And so this guy's, he's been playing a lot longer than I have and, you know, D&D. And I was like, oh boy, I just got a feeling like you're just a good guy. Like he's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. And so I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to like playing with you no matter what. It's going to be okay. And then he adapted just fine. But you know, you gotta, you know, as a game master, you've got to be that guide for those people. And hopefully you're playing with, you know, it's hard. I don't just play with anybody though. You know, like I curate who I'm going to spend that kind of time with. Cause I put a lot of time into it, you know, and I want people that are going to be fun to play with. And so when it doesn't work out, yeah, it's super frustrating. So
cool. No, that's something people don't talk about, is that like, that's a big part of, if you're running something that is not like a main quote unquote mainstream game, is you have to be sort of that good steward, right? You have to be sort of that person that is willing to go, hey, okay, yeah, this is how you think it works, but like this is how it works over here, and it does it this way, and here's why it's really cool, right? So I think that's something that doesn't get talked about enough.
Sure, it's kinda, and I, it's kinda, And I start every game that isn't a campaign. Like if you haven't, like I'm going to run a demo game at camp here in a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of these people have never, well, none of the people that I'm going to play with have ever played with me. But so I'm going to sit down right away and go, hey, listen, here's what we're doing here. We're going to play this game. And so here's the deal. Here are the rules. You don't get to make fun of me if I make a funny voice, right? Because I have to make the funny voices and you get to make the funny voices too, maybe. I don't know. But that's up to you. But like, you don't get to like harass me because I'm doing that. Also, right. This is a, you know, this is a safe place. So like, I'm not here to like, I'm not power tripping to make me look cooler than you in this. Like we're here together. So my job is to have you make as much as I can have you have a good time, but your job is to make me have a good time. And all those other people around the table you see here, that's your job too, to make everybody have a good time. That's real important. So are we in agreement, you know? And so I start with that kind of pitch anyway, to kind of, you know, go, yeah. Listen, you
that's
know,
it's a good starting point. Yeah, for sure.
Something. That's where you start. Yeah. But anyway,
cool. All right. So when does the Kickstarter drop? What are the sort of like, what are the levels? What do you, how does the, you know, cause there's two different books. How does that work? Give us the rundowns so we can get people sure. out there and pledge to it.
Well, let me pull on my glasses here. I don't even remember the pledge level, so I'm going to pull them up. So here's the deal. It kicks off on February 1st for Zine Quest, right? The Kickstarter indie RPG promotional period, which is February. So we're kicking off on February 1st and it ends on the 15th. So we're going to kick off in the evening. Actually, we're going to do a Discord on the Monster Rangers group. Nice. And we've started to do that where we have kind of a, it's not really a party, but we all get together and we kind of watch it launch together.
Oh.
And then it ends on the 15th with a similar sort of thing. So there are two books. So it's the Warden source book, which is our Warden is like our game master, and the Player source book, and those come together. So they're not sold separately in the Kickstarter. They will be sold separately on our site and stuff if people want them that way later. Of course, the Kickstarter gets them first before anybody does. So we always do that. We don't like say, hey, you know, we don't send them to a retailer or anything before you get them.
Right.
And also, oh, and it's shipping this year. Like it's not shipping next year. You don't have to wait 12 months or 10 months for this thing. Like we're going to ship by July and probably sooner than that, but we're going to say July in case, you know, life gets hard.
Sure.
So shipping this year, and we're good at this. Like this will be our 17th Kickstarter. So we have had 16 previous successful Kickstarters and 16 Kickstarters shipped on time. So we really care about that promise, right? You've made a promise to us by throwing money at us. We're, you know, we don't take that lightly. It matters to us that you're happy about this. Absolutely. So
the pledge level. So for both the books, we're going to talk about the books real quick, but
yeah,
you get both books. What's the basic pledge level for both books?
So we've got a PDF level. So just PDFs, nothing mm-hmm. else, no add-ons. You get a fillable PDF character sheet, a Map of Liberty PDF, and that's $25. Mm-hmm. Nice. Next level is $55, and that's the two physical books, a physical 12x18 print of the Map of Liberty. You get a 13-cent Uncle Liberty banknote prop, so it's money in the world, so it's a prop, a set nice. Of four fate dice, a Ranger's skull. That's the skull-headed guy who's our uh-huh. an emblem patch, a metal Liberty buffalo pin. So in Liberty, United States of Liberty, we don't use eagles as the mascot. It's the buffalo.
Cool.
And full-color professionally printed character sheet. So that's there, that.
There is so much. Like, that's coming in. Like, that is so much stuff for, like, the basic level.
Yeah.
And that's yep. awesome. That feels like the old school like box sets where you just get all this stuff in there.
Exactly. Really cool. And so that's something we're going to make, I think, after the Kickstarters. We're going to make a kit, basically, that you buy that's sort of like the old box sets, but more Ranger-y looking, yeah. you know?
That's
cool. We've got a retailer tier where you get 10 copies of both books, and that's $150, so basically at a wholesale level.
Yeah.
And then we've got the veteran, which is all the things you've already heard, along with a spirit badge, which is In our game, badges are magical things. So they're kind of like cantrips that you have in your uniform that give you magic power. So every ranger in a game can have some minor magic powers because that's fun. Yeah. So that's what badges do in our world. There's an Uncle Liberty patch. So Uncle Liberty, so let me tell you about Uncle Liberty really fast. So imagine that you had Uncle Sam, but Uncle Sam was a real guy, and he fought in the revolution to make Liberty free. He also is sort of like, he's kind of like a champion. Like he's sort of like the champion of the land. So like the giant, what's that giant's name? With Blue, the ox, what's that?
Paul Bunyan?
Yeah. So Bunyan, so not Paul Bunyan because it's Liberty. So it's Bunyan the giant. He defeated this giant apparently. And so, but he's still alive in 1913, but they wheel him out in a wheelchair. And so he at the 4th or 5th of July, and he waves a little bit. Anyway, so you get a patch of him. And you get a Goblin Tongue Spirit Badge, which would allow you to talk to goblins in the game. A Red Goblin Circus Spirit Badge as well. A Canvas Dice Bag, and also a Gaming Satchel, which our books fit perfectly into the pocket of. And a Brass Obscuro Coin. So this is the money of the monsters in the world. And so that level is the big level, and that's at 165.
That's awesome because it's all these like artifacts of
this. And props you can use in the game.
Yeah.
So like the Obscuro coins we use as fate points. So that's what you can do with those.
Yeah.
And then we have a bunch of crazy, I don't know, were you able to look at the inside of the Kickstarter at all?
I did like when you first sent me the link, but I'm kind of drawing a blank right now because I've been looking at the books like the last couple hours.
Yeah, so we've got some crazy other add-on possibilities. So in all our Monster Ranger Kickstarters, we traditionally have a relic. So we try to make a one-of-a-kind object it's like a relic from the world. So our founder of the Monster Rangers, this stuff will matter more to core Monster Rangers than newcomers because they're going to go, why would I ever do this? But they tend to be the first things that go. So we have Baron Davis's hat. So Baron Davis is our founder from 1903. So it's a hat that has tattooed drawings of monsters all over the top of the brim and the inside. And then we've got Buddy Ruckus's satchel. Buddy Ruckus is a psychic. He's a psychic ranger, but he's also a dog. Awesome. And so his satchel, which is covered with 84 badges and a patch that have already been sewn on. So that's a one of a kind thing. And then the highest level is this crazy thing. That's another experimentation. We'll see if it goes, is Daniel for the Day. I'll fly anywhere in the United States and play Monster Rangers with you. I'll come the day before. So you got me for a whole day. The next day I'll play bass with you. We can paint minis. We can do whatever you want.
Nice.
But I'm not gonna. But it's gotta respect my marriage to Donna, so can't do that. And I probably shouldn't break any laws, so don't make me do that. I'll help you build a fence if you want. I'm not good at it. I'll be like,
look, I got this bike, this bank heist I've been just dying to do for like a couple of years.
Oh no, yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I have the rights to say maybe.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so that's a crazy. Like $2,000 level. So we'll see what happens. It's very unlikely it goes, but who effing knows? I never know.
You never know.
So anyway,
it's awesome.
Who knows? Yeah. So anyway, it's kooky, but it is what it is. So
it's awesome. I am super excited for this. This is going to be something that I can already tell I'm going to try and get to the table as much as I can. Cause I need more an excuse to play other Fate games. Cause I love Fate Condensed. Like when I read it, it just blew my mind. I was like, oh, look, they cleaned it up. It's so much more streamlined. Like this is the way to do it.
They just explained it nicer.
Yeah, it did. And then like just having this sort of pulpy feel, which brings me back specifically to like things that I really like in indie games is pulp action and this sort of old timey almost kind of feel to it. So it's so many things that I love. And I love monsters. I like anything with monsters. So
yeah.
The idea of not killing monsters and like being like sort of guardians of them and looking out for them against, you know, like these dastardly villains is just everything that I love.
Yeah.
So I am looking forward to it. So this episode is probably going to drop on Wednesday. So the day that it's live. So it'll be live right now by the time you hear this. So go and pledge, grab the books, We didn't talk about the books. I'm going to mention it real quick. The books are in this cool little, what they call scout books. So they're tiny. They look like little actual, like, Boy Scout handbooks. They're the smaller format.
Yeah, they're 5x7.
Yeah. And the quality of these, I've played, I was telling Daniel, like, I've played a game called The Quiet Year, and that's how I first saw these. So the quality of these books are really high. Like, the paper's, like, nice and thick, and the cover's, like, really sturdy looking. And colors on them, the way that they sit, feels really rich or old-timey, or, like, it feels different. Yeah.
Yeah, the colors turn out really, really nice. I was really nervous because we've worked with scout books several times, but not in color. And so I was like, well, I hope the color, like, the it looks good, you know, but we, you know, with the ones that we had printed, the samples, it looks great. So
yeah. And those samples are up on the Kickstarter right now. So go look at the Kickstarter, check out the covers of those books and what they look like, because they're absolutely gorgeous. I love the feel of them. Like, it feels like an artifact from the actual world, which is really cool. So that's on the Kickstarter right now. Go pledge, go get as much as you can of this guy and make him just keep making stuff for Monster Rangers role playing. And then buy his art too. If you get a chance, if you're in Phoenix or any place that he goes, because he goes all over the country to different conventions, and then you see him there, buy his art, because when you see it, you're gonna want it. So cool. Thanks, Daniel.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. You've listened to Issue 1, Volume 3 of the Crit Hit Audio Zine, a Void Cult production. Visit us online at crithitaz.com and voidcult.com. That's C-V-L-T, because that's how the cool kids fucking do it. Opening song, Dead Birds by Keith Doom and the Wrecking Crew. Transition song and ending song, Power Abuse and Chaos in the Streets by S-21. All music is released on a Creative Commons license, CC-BY-NC-ND 4.0. See you next time.